you know that? The culture there is, the ethics behind that are, sit back and be thoughtful with some of our highlighted interviews on Moncrief. Now, the identity of Jack the Ripper has been the source of speculation and investigation for many, many years. And among those people has been the novelist Patricia Cornwell. She's just published a second book, bolstering her contention that the Ripper was in fact the painter Walter Sickert. It's called Ripper, The Secret Life of Walter Sickert. Afternoon, Patricia.
Well, hello, and I was so fascinated listening to everything you were saying earlier, I almost forgot what I was on the show for.
Well, thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
It is.
Well, like everywhere else, the world is transfixed or appalled or choose any word you like, unfortunately, by Donald Trump. So we're going to try and not talk about him during the season.
Well, you know, one
of
the things you said that really caught my attention when you're talking about what you can tell from language and the importance of language, and interestingly enough, that's the most significant evidence in the Ripper case is his own language and letters that he wrote to the media and to the police. A lot of people don't know that Jack the Ripper was an obsessive letter writer. Mm. And so when you start looking at these documents, and there's, I used one of Great Britain's absolute foremost forensic paper expert, Peter Bauer, looked at all these documents and many more, as did some other experts and so forth. And what you begin to see is a real portrait of who this person was, not only the identity, which science will show you points at Walter Sickert, but also just the type of person, you know, the vileness, the mocking tone, all these things. And so I was really interested to hear what you're saying, because this is exactly what we're dealing with today, is language all around us.
Now, Sickert, I suppose, when he was alive or at the height of his career, was he was generally regarded as a very respectable artist. Was he a part of the establishment very much?
He is actually considered one of England's most important artists. He was an apprentice to James McNeill Whistler, of course, who was American, but he was living in London. And, you know, they were at the vanguard of the Impressionist movement. And so it was a very important time in Victorian art history. And oddly enough, the Ripper really was born right out of the art world in late Victorian England, not only because Sickert had started out as an actor and there's a lot of things that were going on with the stage that have to do with this, but also because of the world of painting and the luminaries that he ran around with. But yes, he was part of the establishment, although very antisocial, charming. People loved him, but also he was a very destructive, because he was a sociopath. And
But he
knew Oscar Wilde. He gave Winston Churchill painting lessons in his later life. I mean, this guy, his art hung in the finest galleries, even with royalty. And in fact, I discovered one of his paintings, oddly enough, chained to a door in Scotland Yard's headquarters. Someone had given it to them, and they didn't even know they had a Jack the Ripper painting in their own headquarters. And by the way, let me just say one thing. In referencing Scotland Yard is where I got the name Walter Sickert. I didn't come up with this on my own. I would love to give myself that kind of credit. But in 2001, their top investigator, John Grieve, was the one who mentioned this name, said he was curious about him because of his murder paintings, and if I was going to look into the case, I should look into him. And I just did what I was told, and here we are.
And yes, certainly, and again, this, I suppose, is very circumstantial evidence, but in his work, there's a rather grim aspect to his work.
Yes, there is, and some of it is, and I will point out, if you look in my new book, not only the print version, but also the e-book, which has hundreds and hundreds of images. It's a very high-tech book that Amazon has put out, and I wanted high-tech so people could examine the evidence themselves. But, you know, this is, all of this is, you can say some of it, circumstantial is a good word when you're talking about paintings, but it's like language. That is circumstantial, too. But when you get layer after layer after layer, and then you combine it with things like matching watermarks, matching stationery, three sheets of Sickert stationery that match two sheets of Ripper stationery out of a paper run of only 24 that could have existed. Mm. These types of things start becoming significant and hard to avert your gaze from.
Yeah. And actually, yes, to go back to that initial point you made about the letter writing, it seems to be accepted that the Ripper did send letters during the normally accepted run of activity, but those letters continued afterwards. Is that right?
You know more about this than I do. You're absolutely right. They did. I think the last The last Ripper letter that I've ever seen was either 1896 or 1897. The Ripper letters, and they were going like crazy even in 1889. And they started around September of 1888, and people may not know, Jack the Ripper named himself. The reason we have that name is that's what he called himself, that among many names in these letters. He was Saucy Jack, he was Jackie, he was Nemo, he was a lot of things. And by the way, Sickert's stage name as an actor was Mr. Nemo. And I also found a telegram that the Ripper wrote that was signed Mr. Nobody, crossed through, and then Mr. and then Jack the Ripper. Well, as you know, Mr. Nemo is Latin for Mr. Nobody. Mm. So, and all of this, it starts, again, that's circumstantial. I do have science in the mix, and it all spins out from the science. And then you get to all these outer rings of what of the circumstantial. And now the readers get to be the jury. I want to see what other people think. It's really up to them.
Yeah,
I've just presented the case as best I can.
Does it also imply to us, though, that if the notes continued, the murders continued? But for some,
well, I believe
whatever
it did.
Reason, Scotland Yard chose to ignore them or didn't piece them together?
Well, there were two big things that happened. One, back in those days, you have to remember there was no such thing as forensic science. There was no such thing as forensic profiling or forensic psychiatry. I mean, there was attempts at all of this, but a lot of it was very hocus-pocus, like physiognomy and even, you know, graphology, you know, all these kinds of things that are not science at all.
Mm.
Well, so back in the day, you know, if you have a sexually violent psychopath, it is not unusual. In fact, it's typical if their modus operandi escalates, if it takes more and more violence and more of the thrill to satiate them. And this is what happened with the Ripper. It may very well be that his first murder was stabbings, but then after that it was the throat cutting, and then it quickly deteriorated into disemboweling. And then you look at Mary Kelly, she was practically dissected to the bone. Meanwhile, torsos are starting to show up and body parts. And nobody would count one of these cases if it didn't seem to be identical to the others. And so what happened is the Ripper not only was dismembering people, one of the torsos was found in the foundations of the new Scotland Yard building right in the fall of 1888 when all these cases were going on, but it didn't get counted. There were also children. And the Ripper bragged about this in his letters that he liked children. And there were cases, and I point them out. I did a big search of looking for other cases that could have been the Rippers. And, of course, they continued long after the Ripper spree was believed to have ended. And I will show you some of those cases. One that was as late as 1907. That was the genesis of Sickert's Camden Town murder paintings, the Camden Town murder itself, which I believe he committed. Mm-hmm. And I'll show you a picture of the victim that no one's ever seen before. All of this is in this material. And this will sound strange to say, I don't really care whether people believe me anymore. I'm too old and battle-scarred in this thing. I've been at it almost the better part of 20 years. But what I do care about is I think that all of these wonderful experts, and I give them the credit, all these people who have helped me, they have shown a light on this case, and it is for sure something no one's ever seen before.
Mm.
And this is, and I think that, and I feel good about that because the victims deserve it. You know what? And even Sickert deserves it. In a weird way, I feel sorry for him. I wouldn't wish on anybody to be that kind of monster. He must have been a wretchedly miserable person.
Yeah. And now, at least part of that, and we don't want to be too simplistic in our psychology, but certainly part of that would seem to be he had horrific surgeries performed on him when he was a child.
He did. I wish you could interview me everywhere. You know, because you know what you're talking about. Yes, it's very interesting. In the 1970s, the American Psychiatric Journal of the American Psychiatry Journal or some journal like that, published an article where somebody opined that the nature of Jack the Ripper's crimes made this individual wonder if he had been a victim of medical violence as a child. Astonishing. And because guess what? Sickert was a victim of medical violence as a child. By the age of 5, he'd had 3 surgeries on either his rectum or his genitalia or possibly both. It's hard to know. We only know it was called a fistula. I was told it was from his genitalia, and I describe all this in the book. But for a little boy who was born in 1860 to have 2 surgeries in Germany and finally come to London because those surgeries had failed and to have a 3rd surgery at St. Mark's Hospital for, you know, you know, these baneful maladies of the rectum, and that was the place. Mm. You know, for somebody to have had that, we don't really know what physical damage, but it would have done significant with scarring and all this sort of thing, and who knows what else, but not to mention the psychological damage. Imagine being in a hospital when, I doubt he spoke English, he was 5 and from Germany. Imagine the leeches and the, oh, I described the whole operating theater, what it would have been like, probably no anesthesia.
Yeah.
So are you surprised that he might have started ripping people up and doing these things, especially if he might not have been sexually functioning?
Mm. Is there a possibility, Patricia, that given that he was so well connected, that there may have been people in the British establishment helping him to cover up things?
You know, it's possible. I do think what I do, and my gut believe, is that there are people who knew or were afraid of what he was doing. I am deeply suspicious that his own master, James McNeil Whistler, was suspicious of him. In fact, they became bitter enemies, and I think Whistler was actually kind of afraid of him. And he called him a treacherous man. And I know that his first wife, I think she was afraid of him, because weirdly enough, 3 months before she died of cancer, she knew she was dying. She had her will changed so that she had to get a postmortem examination. Now, that is an odd thing from a prim and proper daughter of a prominent politician in, you know, 1914 or whatever. You know, she was Richard Cobden's daughter, who's, you know, the great politician in England. But anyway, I thought, why? Are you worried that maybe you're not going to die of natural causes? I do wonder, it's a very good point you bring up, were there people that just looked the other way? Certainly, artists in his circle, they wrote in their own memoirs about him dressing as Jack the Ripper and painting murder paintings in front of a bullseye lantern and pretending to murder somebody with a lay figure or a mannequin on a bed in the studio. All these things. And then later tried to take some of these stories back when Sickert began to be named as a possible suspect in the Ripper case. And that kind of started in the 1970s.
Patricia, we have to leave it.
Tonight with me.
Patricia, we have to leave it there. Thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Patricia Cornwell there, author of Ripper, The Secret Life of Walter Sickert. More interviews to make you go, on Moncrief, weekdays from 2 p.m.